Hello, everybody. My name is Sandy, and I'm a compulsive overeater. Okay, here it is. I wanted to show this because I want you to see what it was like before. This is me before. This is me now. Yeah, please. Well, then we're going to put some tape up here. Over there. Let me just... I have to remind myself. There we go. There. All right, to qualify, I've been abstinent for 26 years. I walked in here weighing 165, and I weigh about 130 now. And I am so glad I'm here. If I was going to bring earplugs for everybody that's heard my story, but I left them in the car, so I'm sorry. I'm going to start from the beginning. And that's when I was about 3, 4, 5 years old. I loved food. Absolutely loved food. I was eating everything that I possibly could. You know, I'm sorry. I don't like standing behind a podium because I'm short. Kind of bothers me. Can you, everybody see me? Okay. So I would eat all the time, even as a little kid, and especially when I got to go to my grandparents. I'm from St. Louis. Was born and raised there. Oh, good. So I would just eat and eat and eat, and I just kept on eating as I, you know, go on. And my grandfather and grandmother had all this food in their house. So, you know, they loved to please the grandkids. So you go over there, and they had every kind of candy you could think of. Any kind of food. And, I wasn't restricted at that age. Never. And when I was like 8 years old, my grandfather would pull up in front of our house in this blue and white Cadillac, a Buick that looked like a Cadillac. And when he opened up his trunk, I can even remember this day. Heavenly Hash was right here. Rocky Road was right here. The cigarette, the smoke, they looked like cigarettes, but you blew out smoke, were right here. The gumballs were right here. The little buttons on the paper... We're right over here. I mean, isn't it crazy? Do you remember those stupid little things? I did. As I got older, things got pretty rough in the house. There's 3 girls. I'm the oldest, and my mom and dad. And my mom didn't have any other way to take out her anger except on me. And starting when I was... like 9 or 10, I used to get yelled at constantly, all the time. No matter what I did, whether it was right or wrong or anything else, I got yelled at. My other 2 sisters, one's 8.5 years difference and one is 2.5 years difference. And nothing really happened to them. It was only me. And the main reason was I was very close to my father. My father and I were like this. In fact, I'm a spitting image, if you look at a picture, of my dad. In fact, I had even some of the things he had when he was alive. And my mom didn't like that. So what she would do is beat me. If she found a twig, she hit me, a belt, a brush, a pan. I had scars on my face, on my back. I had a bruise on my chin. I was beaten. And I always had to make an excuse when I went to school or went around anybody. I could not say my mom beat me, because God forbid you should say something like that. I'd even get it in trouble even worse. And then when my mom would send me to bed with no food, my dad would sneak me in something, and when she saw the crumbs on the bed, I'd get beaten again, and my dad would get yelled at. So, you know, this is what it was like. This was my life. And I remember as I was getting older, and I started really eating a lot, I would ride my bike to the supermarket, to A&P Market, and I would steal Hostess Twinkies, cupcakes, candy, all the sweet things, because they just made me feel so good. You know, food was my aspirin. Food helped me survive. When I went to school, I was given 35 cents for my lunch. And I had to remember what they had for lunch because I would go and eat an ice cream sandwich, any kind of ice cream or candy that they had instead of the lunch. So when I went home, my mom would look at me right in the eyes and go, "What'd you have for lunch?" "Oh, I had chicken and I had this." And she'd look at me, she goes, "You're lying." And that's what it was like. I ended up being the biggest liar in the world. I didn't know how to tell the truth. I never knew how to tell the truth. I was afraid if I ever did tell the truth, it'd be even worse. So I got older, and my mom started watching my food. I wasn't very heavy as I went through high school. I was okay, but I was starting to gain some weight, but I wasn't the thinnest person in the world, you know. She would count the pickles in the jar. If she would come to me, "Did you eat a pickle? Did you eat this? Did you eat that?" You know, it was like, and I wasn't allowed seconds, you know, all that kind of stuff. So there was my beginning of my food addiction. I also would go to the drugstores and steal. One day I went to the store with my dad. My dad went to the store, I went to the drugstore, and I stole a candy bar and I got caught. And here I am as a kid walking over to the store to tell my dad that I had stolen something and I needed some money. And that was really hard to do, especially with my dad. So I didn't do that anymore while he was around. I didn't stop doing it, but when he was around, I didn't do it anymore. So going into my teens, my dad had a nervous breakdown a couple of times. And the final nervous breakdown he had, he came out to California without telling anybody. We literally had to send a search party out to find out where he was. And here are my mom and three girls, you know, trying to survive. And it was very hard. And I was working at the time. And when I worked, all my money went to supporting the family. I worked at a place called Taco Pronto. As a compulsive overeater, what a great place. I made tacos whenever I wanted, burritos whenever I wanted them. I mean, I just had a great time at Taco Pronto until I got fired for eating too much. But we finally found my dad, and we ended up moving out to California. He did not want to live back where his family was. Well, I was just going to be a senior in high school. All my friends that I had grown up with since I was 5 years old and gone to school with, I was leaving, and I was all by myself. My sister still had to go to school. They were still in school. But this was my senior year. This I looked at as, oh, wow, I get to go to graduation. I get to go to the prom. I get to do all this. Wrong. I drove out with my dad. It was just my dad and I that drove out together. And I got to eat anything I wanted while we drove out. And I was with my dad, so it was fun. And we came out here, we stopped in Utah, we stopped everywhere, and came out here, and we stayed in a hotel. And then my mom came out with my sisters and all the other stuff, and we had a house. And we moved in the house, and I ended up, my senior year, I ended up going to Taft High School. Well, in 1965, Taft High School was, I am Jewish, but was the snobbiest Jewish, 99% Jewish. And I walked in there, and I was very friendly, had a lot of friends and everything else. But walking into that school, I made two friends the whole senior year. Nobody would talk to me. Hardly anybody would say hi. Nothing. So I never got to go to any of the functions for grad night. And it still hurts when I think about it. I could cry about it because, you know, it's just something I missed. But I ended up getting another job while we were out there. My dad got a job, I got a job, you know, working. And I got it at Baskin Robbins. And it was wonderful. I was there for 4 years. I ate so many almonds out of the Jamocha almond fudge. I ate almost all the pink bubblegum out of the pink bubblegum ice cream. I even, for the first time, got to make my own banana split with hot fudge on it. With Jamocha almond fudge ice cream. God. I'm not a compulsive overeater. And so, you know, I got to eat all this. And I never got fired. I never got fired. But I really started gaining the weight because, again, I was still alone. I still really hadn't made any friends. When I got into Pierce, I majored in physical education, and I competed in sports while I was in college. And I had all this group of friends. We all had our lockers together and everything else. And, you know, finally I had a bunch of friends, and I started feeling like I was safe, like everything was okay. And I even had a boyfriend fly out from Maryland to see me out in California. And I'm going like, what happened in those days? No, because I'm saying this because I'm gay. So you understand. I got all these friends, and it was wonderful. And competing, I loved it. I had been in sports since I was in third grade. I competed in field hockey, everything. And being able to do this, it really got a lot of the stress out of me. So little by little, my dad had another nervous breakdown. We lost the house, and we had to move into an apartment that was a two-bedroom apartment. And was it two-bedroom? I can't remember if it was two or three, but I had to share a room with someone. My parents had their room. I used to watch my mom and dad in a mirror eat all the time, all the time, all night long, because I'm not a sleeper. I can go and go to bed at 1 or 2 in the morning and get up at 5:15 and do my whole day, and then after work I'll go work out, go to a meeting, and do that every day. And that's with no caffeine and no sugar. Yes, I'm hyper and part ADD. And like I'm standing here going, I want to run around the stage. I want to run around the stage. But I can't. But it's, you know, it's just that craziness. And here I was again, starting all over again and helping support the family. Every job I got, I had to help support the family. So I left Baskin Robbins because I got a much better job, much better job. I went to work at Thrifty Drugstore. So now I had food, ice cream, I had candy, potato chips. I had everything in one spot. And I worked at Thrifty Drugstore for a long time. I worked in Thrifty Drugstore until I graduated college. And then I had to go get a regular job, and they didn't have anything. It was very hard. Very hard. I had to fill my purse up with so much food so I could survive, because I was so used to being able to eat anytime I wanted to eat. And here I was. Oh, my God. Let's see. What time is it? So here I was at this other job, and nothing of what I went to school for. I went into advertising. Don't ask me how. But my dad knew this woman who had a magazine, two magazines, and they asked me to come and help sell advertising. And I did that. I had a regular job, and everything was great. And I came home one day, walked in the door, and my mom was meeting me at the door. Now, I am now 21. I walked in the door, opened it up, and she slapped me across the face. I just walked in the door. And I just said, that's it. That is it. Previous to that, I had run away from home when I was in, like, 19. And my dad found me at my friend's and brought me home. And thank God for my friends, because they were all around me. So here I was at 21, and I just couldn't take it anymore. When they were gone one day, I packed up everything I owned, and moved in with a friend. Didn't tell him. I didn't want him to know where I lived. I didn't want him to know where I was, because I could not go through anything anymore. I was taken to a psychiatrist, so the psychiatrist could tell my mom that I was the crazy one causing my dad's problems. And what happened was, the psychiatrist turned around and said, this has nothing to do with Sandy, and she's not crazy. To hear that for me was like, it saved my life. Can you imagine? I grew up that whole life thinking it was all my fault. Everything that happened was my fault. Everything that was done was my fault. I mean, everything. I don't care what it was. It was Sandy's fault. So I moved out, and my dad found out where I was. Came over with a bag of bagels, lox, cream cheese for all of my roommates. We all sat down and had breakfast. And that ended up being a tradition. He would come over every weekend, and we would have breakfast together. When my mom found out I was gay, my dad was fine with it. My mom was okay, but not wonderful. And I remember my first relationship. I got in my first relationship so I could move out. That was one of the reasons I had gotten my first relationship. And I was still eating. I was the cook, and I loved to cook. I would make corned beef and cabbage and mashed potatoes and have all this food, mainly so I could eat it. And the roommates ate whatever they wanted, you know, but it was that. I made homemade manicotti, you know, stuff that made the noodles, made everything. Sat down and gorged on it. And especially when I was going to school because we were up all night studying. And so it was great. Everybody loved it. You know, here I was cooking for them. It was wonderful. They didn't have to do anything. And then I moved out because I left that partner and fell in love with another partner. And we moved into a house, and it was different. I really started working and doing my thing. I decided I wanted to lose weight, so I started taking pills. And I lost weight. I got down really low. Then I gained my weight back. Then I went to Weight Watchers. Did great. Then I gained my weight back. Then I got shots. Did great. Then I gained my weight back. I did everything possible to lose the weight. I could lose it, but I couldn't keep it off. There was just no way. My head would go, give me food, give me food, give me food, give me food. Didn't care about anything else. Didn't care that, you know, I had a job or I got paid or I had to pay bills. All I wanted was the food. I had bags of popcorn, the huge bags I would sit and eat all night long. Give me ice cream. Oh, God, give me anything. Mr. Goodbarge, you know, what are those called? I forgot, never mind. But the candy was everything. And I did that for so long. And I went in and out of relationships. I got in one relationship where my partner was an alcoholic, and I really didn't know it. So I started going to Al-Anon. And when I was in Al-Anon, I met this friend of mine, and it was great. I learned at least some things, how to take care of myself.
I'll give you a little more leash so you can run around.
Thanks. I feel like doing jumping jacks. Let me tell you, ready? I feel like there's an electrical charge going through my body right now. So here I was, and what was I saying? Oh, Al-Anon. So I learned how to take care of myself. Then I left Al-Anon and got in another relationship, got out of that, and I finally met someone. It'll be 28 years ago that I met this person. And this person was a nun. And here I am, the good Jew. When we went for my holidays, Fran would tell why we were here for my holidays. I sat there not saying anything. When I go for her holidays, I don't say anything either, but I enjoy all the stuff they do. So I really started eating, and I also smoked. I did everything. And one day she came up to me and said, I cannot live here with you and watch you kill yourself with the smoking. So what did I do? I gave up smoking and caffeine. The doctor told me to give up caffeine because of how hyper I am. So I gave up caffeine and smoking at once. There wasn't enough celery in the stores on the shelf because that's all I ate. I had to have a celery sprout, pretend like I was smoking, you know. But then I stopped that. But then I really put on the weight. And I kept putting it on. I went up to a size 18. And I was 5'1". I'm now 5 feet. I figure in a couple years, I'll be here. You know, and it'll be hard, really hard for you to see me, but I'll be there. But I really started eating. I was unhappy with myself. Very unhappy with myself. And I ran into my friend again who told me about OA that was in Al-Anon. We were at a party and she lost all this weight and she looked great. Well, I kind of let it go, and then it was around Christmas. It was December 12th. During this time, I banged my head against the wall. I punched my stomach. I was harming myself, and I mean really abusing myself. I was used to the abuse, so it wasn't anything different me doing it to myself. So I found myself abusing myself, and then I went in the kitchen, and nobody was home, and I sat right in front of the refrigerator, opened up the door, and started eating everything that was in the refrigerator that I liked. And I went through the whole refrigerator. I went over, and I walked over to the kitchen drawer, pulled out a black knife, and I stood by the refrigerator just holding the knife like this right to my head. And all I could say was, I'm better off. I am better off putting this knife through my head than suffering anymore. You know, that craziness doesn't stop. It just doesn't stop. No matter what I did, I could not stop the voices. I was put on, I had major anxiety that I became agoraphobic from my anxiety attacks. The only place I could go was to work and home. Look at me now. The psychiatrist said I had burned my nerve endings so bad from the stress I kept in my body for so long. So I had to be put on medication. And I even took myself off the medication and ended up going back being crazy, and they put me back on it and said, don't you ever do this again. You know, I took control of myself. I'm in control. I can do everything myself. I don't need you to tell me anything, because I know. I know what's right and wrong for me. You don't know who I am, so how can you make any suggestions or tell me anything? So I had the knife in my hand, and miracles. The only thing that came into my head, and this is God's honest truth, OA. Don't know where they came from, don't know how it happened, but that was the only thing. I held the knife while I dialed the OA office and found out there was a candlelight meeting on Friday nights in the valley. I drove myself there crying. I could hardly see the road. Walked in, sat in the back of the room. Oh, I did put the knife down before I drove. It'd be kind of hard between my legs. You never know what can happen. So I got to the meeting. I sat in the back of the room. And when I heard people talk and heard them say, I can't stop eating. I can't stop the voices in my head. I feel like I'm crazy. All I want to do is eat. I started really crying. I mean, just bawling, where they could hear me crying in the back of the room. And I just listened to everybody pitch and went, oh my God, I'm home. I found home. I became abstinent that night. That night I walked out of there giving up sugar. And yeah, it was kind of hard. But I did it. I went to meeting every day, got a sponsor. And after working with this sponsor, I got another sponsor. And then I got a sponsor that I had for something like 22 years. And I would call in my food every single day before I ate. So I would stick to it. If I made any changes, I would call. Work the steps. I remember we would meet and go over things. We'd talk on the phone. I remember having to write on, you know, step one, I'm powerless, that it's not my control. I am powerless. I can't do this, and I can't do it by myself. I just can't. You know, step two, you know, and step three, turn my will and my life over to the care of God. Boy, that was the hard one. I would go to temple, but I didn't know anything. I didn't go to Hebrew school. I didn't get by the mitzvah, nothing. But, I, you know, we did the holidays and everything else. So I'm going like, God? Okay, fine, whatever that is. So she told me to make a God box. So I made a God box. And every time I had a problem, it would go in that God box. And I would try to let go of it. I can't say I let go of it, because it would still stay in my head or in my stomach in a knot. So I kept on doing that. And I went to a lot of meetings. I also gave service, because I thought that will keep me coming back. I was either, you know, timer, or I was a delegate, or, you know, secretary of the meeting, or chair, you know, get the speakers. And it did. It kept me going to meetings, because I would give service at different meetings. So I had to go. I couldn't say, nah. To this day, when I leave work and I know I have my meetings, I go straight to the meetings. There is no excuses why I can't go to a meeting. None at all. So that's one thing I learned right away. So then we got on to step four, which was, I think, the hardest thing in my life to do. I did it, if anybody remembers, APOR, which was part of OA many, many, many years ago. And that's how I did all my steps and my four step. And this wasn't making lists. This was taking words like gluttony and like honesty and like theft and like love. I mean, all these words, and you literally wrote just on that word everything that you could remember regarding that word. Everything. I wrote so many pages on each word, I didn't know I had it in me to let it all out. Because I was told if I let it all out, I will feel better. I won't carry around that heavy weight I was carrying around. Now, right before that, my dad had passed away. And that was the hardest thing to have for me to go through. I had lost my soul companion. I had lost the one person that stood next to me. Now I have other things, but at that time, there was that one person that loved me unconditionally. And no matter when I called him or what was going on, he'd be there. So that was really hard for me because after that, guess who got to take care of their mom? I was the only one that lived in the valley. So thank God for this program. Thank God for my partner. Thank God she was a nun because she had that kindness, that gentleness, that sweetness. And she'd go, come on, we got to go do this. Come on, you have to go do this. Be nice. You know, be nice. Don't raise your voice. Don't get her angry. So I kept my mouth shut. That was the best way to do it. But I did it. And when I wrote the fourth step and I had to write on family matters or things, especially hatred, oh my God, there was all these pages on my mom. I mean, almost all of it was on my mom. And a little on my dad, because I was upset for what had happened that caused my life to be this certain way. But, you know, I never realized that I had any part in anything. This wasn't my fault. I was just a kid. You know, I grew up following their footsteps. You know, they tell me to jump, I jump. You know, that's what I thought you were supposed to do. So here I am in the program, I'm doing my fourth step, and I'm sitting on the couch, and my sponsor's sitting on the couch here, and there was a fireplace right here, and she's just knitting, as I'm reading, and I read from morning till night. I mean, we didn't stop. And I cried. I was just in tears. I went through boxes of Kleenex. I didn't even know how I made it through, especially on some of the things I said. And it was also hard for me to take a look at the things that I was responsible for. That I had to turn around and say, I had control of that and that's why this happened. Or because of me saying, I'm doing it my way, that's why it happened. And I got to hear me talking back to myself, going, oh, that's it. When I got done giving away the fourth step, and when we burnt it, I have to tell you, that feeling of relief was like so strong. I felt like I had dumped literally everything and was light as can be. I mean, everything. I had told my sponsor things that I've never told anybody in my life. Never. Some things were pretty bad. I never told anyone in my life. Like, One of the things was I threw a can and hit my friend in the lip with the can, and they had to rush her to the hospital. I set the toilet seat on fire in our house because I thought it would burn because it was in water, the Kleenex, but it didn't. The bathroom burned. So I was like, I always say I was like the bad seed. If anybody saw the movie The Bad Seed with Patty McCormick, spit an image, except she had blonde hair. And she was thinner. But that was my life. And giving all this up and doing what I needed to do in program was like, wow. I followed everything my sponsor had told me to do. When I got done with the 4-step and the 5th step, then I had to do the 6th, the 7th, you know, my character defects. There was a list of character defects. And you know what? I haven't gotten rid of all of them because I'd be perfect and I wouldn't fit in with anybody. No, you know what? I'm never going to be perfect. But you know what? Today I'm who I am. I am who I am. You may not like me, you may like me. So going on, I did all the steps, did all of that. Then I did a lot more service. I gave service. I was chairperson of the San Fernando Valley for 4 years. I also was in a group development. I did everything. I volunteered for everything, and I did it. Now let's go to today. Yes, I'm with my partner, and we have the happiest relationship in the world. My family told me if I hurt her, I will be disowned. See, here's another thing. My family will disown me and keep her. I will be out on the streets again all alone. It's nice to be myself. I can laugh. I can just be who I am. She says I drive her crazy and she loves it because it makes her laugh. You know? I'm not mean like I used to be. There's no reason for it anymore. I can't say I'm perfect. There's times when I do lose my temper, a lot of times, oh, also, I am diabetic, became type 1 diabetic at the age of 47. When the doctor said you could get this, this, and this, and die from this, I said, no way, and I gave up flour, and I went down to 119 pounds, and it was the first time the doctor said to me, you need to gain weight. Here I am in OA. Okay, lose gain. So I did exactly what he said. I work out. I have 50 pounds of muscle in this little body. I have bulk. I love it at 65 years old. You know what? I never thought I'd be here. I never thought I'd be alive. Really never thought I'd be alive. I thought I'd be dead. My whole life was planned on I was dying and going to be in the grave very early. But I am so happy to be alive. I have a smile on my face all the time. I enjoy giving a service. I enjoy this program. I could never, ever leave this program. I was talking to someone, and I said, you know, I don't know if I knew I was going to die from cancer or something, would I go to Ben and Jerry's and eat? And I said, my luck, they find a cure, and I lost my abstinence. And I'd have to start all over again. My luck. But you know what? I can't leave these rooms. I want to be joyous and free. I want to be happy-go-lucky. I want to be able to run around with my arms out, you know, in a park and be myself. I want to have fun. I want to work this program and get as healthy as I can. I don't want the thoughts in my head. I don't really have them that much anymore. Yes, sometimes they do come through. Yes, sometimes I get stressed out. But you know what? I never think about the food first. My food plan is I really don't eat meat. I'm more vegan, vegetarian, and vegetables. Very low in carbs because of being diabetic. And I don't go off of that. I went to Italy. I went to New Zealand, brought my food, stayed on my food plan, lost weight, did not gain 1 pound. When we went there, the chefs at all the places we ate knew what my food plan was, had food ready for me. I made sure. So no matter where I go or what I do, my food is with me. I don't care if we go to a restaurant. I'll bring my food if I can't eat. I will not go off this program or my food plan. God is my closest person. This morning I'm driving, I look up in the sun, and I do this every morning. I breathe in the rays from the sun and say, okay, God, I can feel you going down my chest and through my body every single day. I say the serenity prayer every single day. I live up in the canyon, so I have this gorgeous view. And I stop, and I say all my prayers, and I tell God everything I'm grateful for. And thank God for being here for me. I now go to temple for the holidays. I'm there. You know, and I enjoy it because I go to a temple that's a 12-step temple. So it is so nice to be listen when you're hearing the rabbi or the cantor and talk about the 12 steps. The music director is in program. So he takes some of the prayers and puts them in the music. It's like, what a great feeling to be there with all these people that are in program. Not just OA, but all kinds of programs. And it's such a great feeling when it's New Year's. I feel great on New Year's because I'm around all these people that are starting out the New Year abstinent. It's great. And the friends I hang around with, I love because we all have the same thing in common. Where can you eat? 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 You know, and it's wonderful. We never have a problem of what you can eat because we all eat about the same. You know, we can always find something to eat no matter where we go. But it's the clear head. It's the feeling I can put my shoulders down instead of up around my neck. It's the love I get. The love I can... One more minute. Okay. The love I can give. It's helping newcomers. My sponsees. I love my sponsees. One of my sponsees came up here today just to hear me speak. I don't know why, but she came up here. But... And it's great. I just, you know, I love being a part of this group. Another thing is, I used to have everybody like me. Now I don't give a shit. I don't care. Do not care. You don't like me? Your problem. Not mine anymore. I do my thing, and that's all that counts. As long as I'm not hindering on anybody else or causing any problems with anybody else. You know, I did some things while I was in the program, going through it. I don't do it anymore. And that's the change in me. My family saw me for the first time in 42 years, and when they saw me, they could not believe I was still alive and I was the person I was. They thought I'd be either on drugs or in jail. So all I can say is, if you're new, keep coming back. Please, don't walk out of these rooms. It's the best thing for you, even if you don't become abstinent. Keep coming back because you will. Read the literature. Work with a sponsor. Do the steps. Make outreach calls. I'm saying all this because this is what I need to do. No matter how many years you have in this program, you don't stop doing all the work. You don't stop doing the work. So I'm an action plan. Here I am. So thank you very much. I appreciate it. Thank you.
I knew you printed that up. That's awesome.